The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, over the last few weeks, student protests have raged on campuses right across the globe, including in Irish universities. On Tuesday's Hard Shoulder, Henry McKean accompanied former Minister Alan Shatter, who is Jewish, to UCD, where they spoke to some of those who were protesting. But how much do they know about the focus of their own student protest?
I can't remember exactly now what the push was for, because originally they wanted to push the university away from any investments in Israeli companies or anything, but the university came out and said we never had. And now I can't remember the exact thing they've said. I remember reading through it.
They have a sign over there that says globalise the intifada. Do you know what that means?
Oh, I actually don't know, no. That sounds very strange. No, I'm not too sure now.
And I think another one was dismantle Zionism or something.
They seem to have a lot of slogans now where it's kind of like, guys, you need to make yourself, your message here a bit clearer.
So you wouldn't be familiar with that?
No.
They seem to be advocating the eradication of the state of Israel and that it be replaced by a Palestinian state. Is that something you'd support?
The Israel-Gaza conflict is a complicated one. I don't believe in genocide. I believe in peace for everybody. And, you know, I'd just be interested to see how the encampment goes and how it all resolves in the end.
I think they're painting it out to be very black and white when it's not a black and white situation.
I sort of get the impression that there's a lot of tents to make it look as if it has more support than it has, and about a half a dozen people hanging out.
I don't know that much about it, but I think it's good that they're doing something to show they're not staying silent. I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, as a contrast, last week we spoke to a guy called Christopher Iacovetti, a graduate student at the University of Chicago, about why he was continuing to protest.
Good morning.
The protest itself, is it very specific to the University of Chicago, or is it a general protest in solidarity with what is happening in Gaza?
Yeah, so many of the demands that are part of this encampment campaign nationally are also demands that our chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine and other Palestine solidarity organizers around the country have been making.
Now, the difficulty, I suppose, is that when, for example, the New York Times poll of those swing states where Biden has been losing ground to Trump, there is what they call a plurality of those who support Israel rather than supporting Palestinians.
Zionism is a deeply entrenched ideology in the U.S. That echoes in many ways Manifest Destiny and other imperial and colonial ideologies that are native to the U.S. project, so to speak. So that's not terribly surprising. I think what is more surprising and encouraging is that despite the pervasive anti-Palestinian bias in U.S. media coverage, which has marginally improved but not by much, and despite the overwhelming, virtually unanimous support of the political class for the U.S. backing of the Israeli regime, young people, especially in increasingly large numbers, are beginning to see through a lot of the lies that we've all grown up hearing, which probably became more viciously anti-Palestinian and Islamophobic in the context of the Bush presidency and the War on Terror years, so-called. So I think young people are beginning to see through the lies that, for example, Israel is always defending itself despite being a military occupier, that Israel has a right to exist understood as basically the right to maintain by violent and artificial means a perpetual demographic majority of Jewish citizens over Palestinian subjects. The idea that the Israel-Palestine conflict, so-called, is this quagmire that's super complicated that nobody can understand, when in reality it's a fairly run-of-the-mill settler colonial project where one population is coming and intent on erasing, either by expelling or exterminating another indigenous population.
Isn't that a kind of a mutual position? If you take that as the Israeli position, it's also the position of Hamas. They want to obliterate the Israelis from the region. So,
a couple things about this. First of all, I have no interest in defending Hamas as an organization or in their political ideology or whatever. I don't think it's quite accurate to say, at least in a generalizing way, that their political program, though, is to eliminate Israelis from the region, particularly if you're talking about their politics since entering electoral politics in around 2005. I mean, so in 2006, for example, they signed a document, the Palestinian prisoners, a document that all the Palestinian factions signed, which allowed for a recognition or at least a mutual sort of two-state settlement alongside Israel, not as something that they ideologically prefer, but as something that they are willing to accept as the consensus of the Palestinian people. I think that they're a much more politically malleable actor than people realize, in part because they have simply been for a long time the only significant political actor in Gaza. And this means there's a fair deal of fluidity in what they're after. But more importantly, I would just say, when we talk about the Palestinian side, so-called, this should not be reducible to Hamas. And for example, Marwan Barghouti is a political prisoner who all polls show would overwhelmingly trounce every other party's leaders in a national election were he to be freed and were elections to be allowed. So the Palestinian struggle by and large has never been expulsionist and intent on erasing other populations on religious or ethnic bases in the service of creating an exclusively Palestinian ethnostate.
Do you believe that many of your fellow protesters understand all of this history, or is it an emotional reaction to the imagery we've seen from Gaza and the reaction of Israel to the events of October 7th, which many regard internationally as disproportionate, although some reaction was certainly going to come on foot of the outrage of October 7th?
I certainly think that there is a spectrum of, if you're talking about like detailed historical knowledge or political knowledge that young people have, I think that many do have fairly sophisticated understandings of the history because they care about the subject and they bother to, you know, pick up books and read about it. And there are plenty of wonderful resources available. You know, it doesn't take so long to consult a couple of good historians and get a basic grasp of the situation. But more importantly, I would just say that young people can see a genocide for what it is. And they can see that it's wrong when Palestinians in East Jerusalem and the Nakab Desert, in Hebron, in various places are being expelled, their homes demolished, their towns designated military zones, all for the crime of being the wrong race and the wrong ethnicity. I mean, there are certain aspects of the situation that are so glaringly obvious, unless somehow propaganda is getting in the way, that I think while it is the case that many young people have a more, you know, advanced political background or something, that's not necessarily needed to say it's wrong that the U.S. is continuing to preside over a genocide inflicted on this ghetto of 2.3 million people. And it's wrong that the U.S. is continuing to supply arms unconditionally to a state that is regularly colonizing the West Bank in more dramatic and violent fashion.
I'm not sure whether you'll vote in November, but what kind of a choice do you have? I mean, Joe Biden is being criticized, obviously, for the continuing supply of offensive weapons to Israel and the unwavering support of the state of Israel, if somewhat less enthusiastic support of Netanyahu. And then you've Donald Trump. Where do you go?
It's hard to say. I mean, personally, I cannot bring myself in good conscience to vote for either of those men. I think they're two of the worst possible candidates that have been presented in the last century of U.S. political history, which is saying quite a lot. Genocide is a bar that I think goes beyond any threshold of acceptability or lesser of two evilism. And it's very important to accent that the U.S. has not just been complicit in this genocide in the way that various other, say, West European countries have been. It's that the U.S. is actively presiding over this genocide. And more broadly, the nature of the U.S.-Israeli relationship since I would say at least the Ford administration has not simply been an alliance that I find troubling or something. It's been the U.S. playing the enabling role in allowing every single one of Israel's crimes to continue, whether that be the crime of occupation, the crime of apartheid, the crime of denial of refugee return, and now the crime of genocide. These are all not simply Israeli crimes. They are U.S.-Israeli crimes because the U.S. uses its permanent member veto at the Security Council.
Do you believe that your movement actually has been successful? Because we know that Joe Biden insisted that certain weapons would not be supplied, weapon systems, 2,000-pound bombs and so on, that might be used offensively in Rafah. Is that a mark of your success, that there was some mitigation?
I wouldn't be surprised if there were some relation between the comments that Biden made and the one shipment that he delayed and the popular pressure that he's feeling. My understanding is that what he really did was he made some critical remarks for show on television and announced that he was delaying, not even canceling, but delaying a shipment of around 3,000 arms. And if my memory is correct, more than 300,000 arms have been sent in the course of this genocide. So you're talking about a very small fraction. And then finally, the State Department released its findings that had been promised some time ago, determining whether or not weapons supplied to Israel were being used for human rights violations. And it came to basically no enforceable conclusion. It said
what it did say, to be clear, was they believed it is very possible that American arms were used against the civilian population, but that given it's a war zone to which they've no access, that it would be difficult to prove.
Right, which is a sort of remarkable claim because their ally and the country to whom they're acting as a benefactor, Israel, certainly does have access.
And yet Mitch McConnell was critical even of Biden's limiting of those arms to their ally, Israel. Mitch McConnell, who's the minority leader of the Republican Party in the Senate, that's his view. He's the top Republican bar Trump. And he was critical even of that small gesture on the part of Biden.
Well, yeah, I mean, this gives you some sense of the insane spectrum represented currently by U.S. party politics. I mean, Ted Cruz, for example, a prominent Republican senator, declared after this announcement of a pause of one shipment that Hamas and Hezbollah have no greater friend on earth than Joe Biden.
Christopher Iacovetti, who's a graduate student at the University of Chicago and deeply involved in those protests, which, of course, were dismantled recently by police. Christopher, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.